Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have Dr. Tim Hayes with us, and I'm not sure if Dale's with us yet, but this is Aramaic Friday. Today is Friday, July the 25th, 2014, and we welcome you to the show. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael. Hello, Michael.
Thank you,
Gerhard. There you are.
I was a little bit mute button challenged, but I'm back. And so we welcome everyone to Mindshifters Radio. It is an honor and a delight to share with each of you who chooses to be part of our show every day, and or whether it's once in a while or every day or for eternity, we're delighted that you're here. We are much appreciative of the opportunity to share these tools and the insight that comes from living in an understanding of this whole energy system called life. It is an energy system that people think is something physical. We've been tricked by our eyes, and being tricked by our eyes, we've lost contact with how the world really works. And so what we're looking to do is to establish an understanding in particular of who it is we are and how it is that we work. And our thesis is simple. If you hold a newborn child, you know exactly what a human life is. A, when you hold a newborn, you hold human life. If you find yourself functioning without that human life, then perhaps it's time to do something. And the something that we invite you to do is to really, truly awaken and do whatever it takes to be restored to the truth of who you are. And Jesus tells me that I'm a little bit muffled today, and so I'm going to change locations with my phone. If I fade out, I'm going to go through a place we don't have the greatest cell signals here. In the Ozark. And so if I fade out a little bit for a moment, hopefully I'll get to a place where I have a better signal and you'll be able to hear me more loudly and more clearly. The key tool that we offer, along with many, many tools for achieving this experience of the human life, achieving the experience of being the active presence of love, is the tool of 6th century Aramaic forgiveness. Forgiveness not being what the Greek or translations based on Greek understanding of the ancient Aramaic teachings, but rather going back to those Aramaic teachings themselves and realizing that the word forgive is a tool. And it's not a tool for letting other people off the hook because you have pain or turmoil. It's a tool for going inside yourself and removing your pain and turmoil. Not an easy process. Actually pretty simple, but not easy to understand because we've been brainwashed in such a different direction. We've been brainwashed into blaming everyone else, and because our language is that of blaming everyone else, our mind goes right along with us and says, well, yeah, if you want me to show you that it's everybody else's fault and we have nothing to do with it, then okay, I'll do that. You might want to remember you've been through it 87 different times with 42 different people, and you're the only one that was there every time, and maybe that would be an indicator that somehow you're involved in your life and it isn't all about them. And what forgiveness empowers you to do is to see that. And when you can see that, you get the blessing of being able to change the root of the output of your mind and literally remove pain and turmoil. Literally remove your capacity for pain and turmoil. I don't know if you're hearing it, Jeannie, but I'm getting some noise in the background, so maybe we could mute somebody there.
Okay.
The tool that we're working with in the intensive the last day or so has been the tool of responsibility communication. It's just been so much fun to watch the, number one, the support in the intensive, the group of people that's here, and the level and the quality of support that's being offered is monumental. And then to watch the shock and surprise as people really observe how, when they communicate responsibly, when they communicate about themselves, because you'll notice most everybody in upset is talking about the boss or talking about their spouse or talking about their children or talking about their neighbor or talking about the government or talking about the Russians or the Czechs or everybody's talking about everybody else around their upset. How often in your world have you heard somebody in upset really truly talk about what's going on inside of them in terms of things like, I feel? Now you say, oh, I've heard people say how they feel all the time. Yes, but you'll notice they usually say, they made me feel. And one of the interesting things about the human mind is that it is an evidential device. And that means it can only give you evidence that proves that what you're telling it to show you is true. And so when you say, you made me feel, you may think you're talking about yourself, but you're not. And your mind has to hallucinate. Your mind has to set up evidence that proves that somebody else is the cause of your feelings. I invite you to try it for a couple of days. The next time you're in disturbance or upset, instead of saying a word about anybody else, not a word, just talk about yourself. Just talk about what's going on inside of you. And leave out every reference to everybody and everything outside of you. When that happens, we've been doing a practicum with that. That's part of this particular intensive. It's a codependence to interdependence communication practicum. And so the practice being, when I don't mention another person's name, I don't have the thought of another person, but I just talk about what's going on inside of me, I get to climb down inside myself. I get to drill down into the cause of my pain and my turmoil. And or I get to see how my mind tries to keep me focused on the outer world and this stuff out there and thinking that the stuff out there is the cause of how I feel. So it's a pretty cool process. We're having fun with it. And we would delightfully share the tools that we've got with you. If you have not accessed First Century Aramaic Forgiveness yet, or maybe it's been a while, we invite you to go to our website, www.whyagain.org, and you'll see a bullseye in the middle of the page. If you click that bullseye, look down the list. The first item is Chapter 24 of my book. It'll tell you about the forgiveness process. The second link is the actual worksheet itself. Then there are a whole series of radio shows where we walk somebody through the whole forgiveness process. really quite amazing. And I'm not sure, is Magda on the line with us, Jeannie? Magda will be 828.
I'm looking for her number. We do have Dale and Tim. I don't see Magda's number.
Well, let's say hello to Dr. Tim today, then. How do you be, sir?
I'm doing well. I will probably not be able to say much today because there will be a Sawzall in my right ear in just a minute. They're deconstructing
really? Okay.
Part of the office. And so I'm tuned in and listening. And is Dale again not with us today?
Haven't seen Dale yet.
He is with us.
Awesome. Very cool.
So,
all right, well, have fun with your construction project,
and I will be listening in.
We'll look forward to seeing your new office when we get there.
All right, great. Thank you.
Blessings. Bye-bye. Dale, how are you, young man?
I'm phenomenal. Am I here?
Yeah, that's awesome. How was your journey out of the woods last week?
What's that?
How was your trek into the wilderness last week?
It was nice, actually. I had it was good. It's one of those things that I don't do enough, let's put it that way. It's funny because, I mean, here I live in western North Carolina. I live in these amazing mountains. And it's so easy to get sort of a tunnel vision focused on whatever, heal the world mode or something like that. I don't know. But it's nice to just get out and sit and almost do nothing. I was at Mountain Light Sanctuary, which is a place I do all kinds of stuff at. And it's funny because when I go there, if I go there for a few days, if I don't stay very active, what it wants to do, like what my body wants to do, is to just sleep. And I'll sleep for 2 or 3 days and just kind of come back home. It's amazing. It's like a recalibration unit. I think I took you out there a few years ago, didn't I? Mountain Light Sanctuary.
Well, 35 years ago. You're talking about Jim Gore's place?
No, not the Light Center, Mountain Light. The place I took you out, they were sort of out in the middle of the forest. It was a little place, it almost looked like the Shire from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Well, they're doing the bamboo, growing bamboo.
Yes, that's it. Yeah, the bamboo is quite...
Yeah.
Well, actually, when I do full-blown retreats there with a couple dozen people, if the weather permits, we actually do the still point breath work in the bamboo forest, which is kind of neat. People are sort of scattered out throughout the forest there in bamboo, which is a pretty cool, like almost like a transdimensional place to do it. It happened on a whim one day, and then I noticed that it had like a real special opening quality being out there in nature like that rather than in a room, and it's been really neat.
Cool. Well, my understanding is that bamboo has in its structure a lot of silica and is really quite an energy conductor. So I would think that it would lend to another level of opening in the still point breath process.
Yeah, it's funny, too, because there's some people around here that call it an invasive species, which I guess technically it is on one level. But there's something very – maybe it's the Asian Oriental connection that we think of with, like, Japanese gardens and stuff. But I don't know. There's just – I never knew that about the silica. That's really neat. It's got a certain energetic quality to it. Even a piece that's been hollowed out, there's just something about it. And it grows fast. I mean, literally, I've seen that stuff. I've actually sat there in chairs reading and seen a single piece of bamboo grow well over a foot in a single day. It's pretty crazy stuff. It grows fast.
Definitely a renewable product, and it's amazing the things they're making out of it. It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I'm glad you did some respite and some quiet time. That's awesome. And by the way, for those who don't know who Dale Allen Hoffman is, Dale Allen Hoffman is our Heartland resident Aramaic scholar, and we are much appreciative. And if you want information on what Dale is doing and where he's traveling, I was saying to somebody the other day with 4 kids in the house, I'm not sure how you do all the traveling that you do and such, but I offer accolades, and Dale's website is www.daleallenhoffman.com.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm actually, it's interesting that you say that, because I've been pondering. That's the thing. I love to travel. I love to be in front of people, but at the same time with the family, it's an interesting, well, it makes it when I am here that I really do my best to really be here. But I've really been pondering a lot and doing a lot of research about how to create more of a, you know, more of a consistent web presence that kind of brings people together across the world. And it's interesting that that comes up, because one thing I'm actually focusing on right now is over the next couple of weeks, I'm filming lots and lots of videos that I'm gonna start sort of posting up over the next few months on a pretty regular basis every week. But I'm actually starting my own blog connected to my website, because I've tried to post things on, you know, I've been on Facebook for years. I don't spend much time on there much anymore, because I realize there's not a lot of while it can get to a lot of people, there's not a lot of an investment in terms of having to know. Like, people will just, I'll post something and I'll watch people literally just try to annihilate other people on posts that I put up just because of people's opinions. And I realized that the best thing would probably be for me to have my own blog and to actually have someone have to sign in and have an account, you know, even just a free basic account to be able to actually comment on things. That's the other interesting thing on YouTube is I noticed that people who are sort of pointing at me as being the cause of whatever they're feeling, you know, because of basically being a catalyst to let a lot of things out, a lot of the religious conditionings, almost every single time, probably 29 out of 30 people that put harsh, almost like verbal attacks on some of my videos, I can smile now. It's like I laugh, because I think back to when it was such a personal thing for me, and now it's like, hello. You can look, and they don't even usually have a profile icon. It's just like the standard little YouTube thing. And if you click on their profiles and you look, all they do is they attack other people all day too. So I'm honored. I'm actually at a place where I'm honored to at least be part of a catalyst to be able to bring a lot of this stuff out. And that's the thing. I mean, on my website, I'll be able to I don't know that control is the word, but I'll be able to have a bit more fluidity. And yeah, I guess it's control in really help using it as a thing, a place to educate people and really draw out the essence of the deeper meanings of the teachings, rather than kind of mixing it into like all, you know, different people that just want to just attack it because of whatever's in their own heart. I'm really going to sort of hold people to whatever it is that they're posting and like, look, let's really have a dialogue about this. I'm not interested in a debate where we're beating each other's heads in anyway. I just, I'm very open, though, to really give people a solid place to come and visit. Just maybe, you know, every day I'll probably post something, even if it's just two lines with a little chestnut, like a translation or something like that. So I'm really excited. I've wanted to do it for years. People have been asking me for years to do it, and we'll see how it goes. That should be up within a couple of weeks, the blog.
Oh, now let me see if I got this clear. People actually accuse you of causing what they're feeling?
Oh yeah, I know. It's unheard of. It's an unheard of thing. It just never happens. Yeah.
I mean, I've never heard that happening before. Jeez. And
yeah, I know, especially in your line of business, of course. Nobody's ever done that with you either, so and I've never seen anybody do that with you except for maybe four dozen times. So yeah.
And people tell you what you should be doing and how you should do it who don't know anything about what you're doing. We've actually had people who've never been to an intensive and complain about the way we do an intensive and tell us how we should be doing it. You know, it is amazing how people's minds work and they think they're so righteous and right. And you know, it's just an old game when one has a mind filled with hostility or fear. And a power person dynamic where the power person was super critic or, you know, I've had people who offer what appears to be praise, but it's really a criticism shielded or, you know, sort of surrounded with what looks like praise. And what I know when you watch that happen and you understand the codependent game, you know that person's power person was an expert at the old, curveball, backhanded compliment. And it's amazing that people have no idea what they're saying about themselves when they get into that kind of conversation.
Yeah. It's funny. The first video I'm going to make is actually about responsibility. It's about forgiveness, and it's going to set a base for the blog. I'm actually filming that tomorrow. It's going to set a base for the tone of the blog, or at least the openness and the clarity of the blog. And the first thing I'm going to say is, as soon as you sign up, you know, and get your little profile here, this is the video that I'd like you to watch. And and I'm going to be real clear saying, look, let's be clear that when we get into that irritability and we get into that heavy judgment and we get into the harsh criticism and we get into that attack mode, which, of course, it's quite obvious when we get there, especially to other people looking at us. Sometimes we go blotto, but as soon as we get in that, we're no longer taking responsibility for what's inside of us. So that's what it's going to be, is I'm going to literally, you know, if someone's going to want to be in that, just like at an intensive, you know, if you've got someone at an intensive, not that this has ever happened, and of course, and they're pointing their finger in somebody else's face, I'm not a saying that's ever happened in your 20-plus years doing the intensives at Heartland, but, you know, and you hold people, there's an accountability there, you know, and it was an interesting thing for me when I went to Heartland because I don't really believe I'd ever been really understood what responsibility was until that summer. And accountability, I thought that accountability just meant that basically I had to do what somebody else wanted. And it was an amazing experience that summer to see all of that. Every single one of us went blotto, you know, everybody, and at one point or another. And it was just amazing to see the resonance of seeing it pop around the room and see someone just literally almost turn into a different person right before my eyes. But to be able, yes, for me to be able to be conscious enough to have my breath moving and to be in access with what was resonating within my own heart, to be able to recognize it, which I'd never been able to do anywhere at any point before that in my life, because I'd never even knew what the whole process was. I was never taught this. I was never taught how. I was never taught even that things work that way. It was just always, it's me and it's you, and if I feel bad and you're near me, that means it's your fault. Wow. But it's one of those things that I still remember the first time I read Why Again, and of course reading chapter 24 over and over and over and over and over again, and the worksheets over and over and over, and you and I have talked many times about how people can look at that worksheet and think, oh my God, it's so complex, there's words all over, ba-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, not looking at one step at a time, it's just this constant yakking about the complexity. And it's not actually complex in any way whatsoever. We make it difficult, but it's not even really like we make it difficult. What happens is when our stuff starts resonating and comes up, we'll do anything we can to keep it locked down and stuffed down, including saying, this doesn't work, you're wrong, I'm right, the worksheet's too complicated, this forgiveness thing, it's not worth the time, I'd rather live and wallow in misery and hardship for the rest of my life, because it feels so much better, doesn't it? Not.
Well, it's certainly easier. It doesn't take much effort to do that if that's what the generations have been doing. I love the quote from Romans that says, beware you who judge another, for that in which you judge another, you've been playing the game. You've been guilty of that particular behavior. But people don't get that what they see because it's in brain cells. What they're disturbed by because they have it in brain cells and there's disturbance attached. And they think it's out there. And, you know, the same thing with the complexity of the worksheet. You know, if you look at the question, it says, you know, what am I feeling? What's my goal? Cancel my goal. I choose to connect to love. Like, what's complex about that? But the mind that wants to avoid and doesn't want to deal and has to be in control and has to tell everybody else what to do, oh, there's something wrong with that. You know, it's just,
yeah,
it's just fun to watch the replicant mind replicate its power person's behaviors. And, of course, I'm particularly focused on the power person behavior because that's exactly what we're covering right now in the codependence communication practicum. So it's a cool process.
So let's dig into it. We never actually planned anything with today, so.
Well, let's look at that idea of beware you who judge another. Or that in which you judge another, you have been guilty of practicing. when you break that down from the Aramaic, how does that look for you? What does that convey?
Well, you know, I'm trying to think of the word judge, what it is in Aramaic. While you're sort of continuing, I'm going to dig up that particular word, and maybe in a few minutes I'll be able to add something in there.
Cool. All right. So to really look at the reason, you know, one of the things I'll do in the Healing Through Relationships workshop is on the board I'll draw a line, and I'll draw a semicircle above it, and then two small semicircles inside of it. And many people recognize it as what they call, you know, Casper the ghost looking over a table, or some people will call it a two-door igloo. Some people will call it a two-door train tunnel. Some people will call it a scrub woman looking at a scrub woman from behind. There are lots of meanings you can give it. And the invitation I offer to people is that those lines on the board are just lines on the board. They're not anything. They're not a two-door train tunnel. They're not Casper. They're not Kilroy. But someone who says Kilroy when they look at it can only say Kilroy because they have Kilroy in brain cells. If in the year 1500 I drew those lines on a board, I guarantee if I gathered every person on the planet, there would not be one person that would say a two-door train tunnel. I guarantee if we went to the equator, to people who had never left their, jungle homes, there wouldn't be one person that would say two-door igloo. Why not? Because they don't have the brain cells. So when I look out and I go guilty, bad, wrong, why am I putting that information on that particular framework? And the only reason is because that's the content of my brain cell structure. And so many people, because their brain hallucinates pictures that are the cause of what's outside of, or pardon me, that convince them that the cause of what they're feeling is outside of them, they have no idea that they're looking at the content of their own brain cell structure. And they wail and they whine and they beat on people and they complain and they whine and they complain because of what other people are doing, never realizing that the meaning they hold for that framework of whatever that person's doing is a meaning contained within their own minds. And when they learn to be responsible, they can just stop being so miserable about what everybody's doing. Because, of course, in the mind that is in total denial, it's all everybody else's fault. And so that, as I see it, judgment is when something fires in carbon-based memory and I, as a being, get lost in it and buy it as gospel, I'm in judgment. And I can only do that process if that particular information is in carbon-based memory. If I don't have, you know, people are ABC, whatever the judgment is, if I don't have that in my brain cell structure, if I haven't experienced that with my power person, I'm not going to be seeing it because the content isn't there. So it's fun to recognize that the output of my mind, the realities that I experience, always tell me more about the content of my mind than the world I think I'm looking at. And that's such a powerful insight and such a powerful opening to, oh, I think I'll just go in and clean out all this disturbed trash. And instead of having to pound on and point at everybody else and tell them what's wrong with them, I'll show up instead of as a complaint, I'll show up as a blessing. Oh, gee. And even for the person who's, you know, off base, instead of having to be pounding on them for their mistakes and what they've done, it's just, oh, can I support you? It looks like you've got some pain and turmoil going there. What happens now? And so to let loose of that judgment is, you know, just don't believe everything carbon-based memory has to say, because it's the biggest liar that ever was and the father of liars. So you find anything, Dale?
Yeah, actually, you know, it's amazing. As soon as I pulled it up on a lexicon that I've got here, it popped up into my mind. I remembered that what's funny about that is there's two different words for judge. There's nothing in that I'm aware of that Jesus said using the second word, which I'll talk about in a sec. The first word is either deun or deon or deana. Now, in Matthew 7, when he's saying that in which you judge another, that's that word deon, which is the word for judge that he used in that case in terms of judge another person. And one of the things I often talk about in reference to Matthew 7 in some of my talks when I'm talking about judges, I'm telling people it's not necessarily you spot it, you got it. It's not necessarily that if you see it, necessarily that it's yours, but if you see it and there's a rub with it, there's some sort of issue you have, something that's keeping you from being present in the moment because of whatever's resonating inside of you. But what's interesting is that word deon is the word that he uses as judge there. Now, what that really means is a heavy, harsh criticism, not necessarily a critique, which is the thing that's fascinating to me is maparshana is the other word which shows up in James. It's I believe it's in James chapter 2. That word judge is a different because what that word means is to discern. Interesting. But the one that Yeshua used for when he says that in which you judge another, he wasn't saying that in that which you discern or recognize as maparshana would be, but rather that which you've got an issue with. Not only do you see it, but of course you're seeing it and you're harshly judging, criticizing that person, which is, that's it. You know, that step, you know, the first step to recognizing is, look, if you've got a rub with it, if it's something that keeps you out of the moment, then it's your thing as much as it is, or you know, obviously even more so than it is theirs. So it's not a word that means just simply to discern when he's talking about that in which you judge another. It really means that which you've got a major issue with, which, of course, that's why I often talk in my talks about, you know, the sort of the TV preachers that you'll see with these on these huge homophobic rants. It's an interesting thing because the louder someone becomes pointing outside of themselves about something that's out there that's broken and bad and wrong and somehow needs to be fixed, the more they reveal that which is within their own heart, in the words of James Allen, which I find a lot of smiling when I came to that realization that, wow, and the louder they scream about it, they're talking about something that's not only in their conditioning, but something that's in their heart that they're trying to point out there about it. And, yeah.
How often are they found in the back room doing exactly what they're ranting against?
Absolutely, yeah. And that's, you know, yeah, and there's a long list of those, so, yeah.
And, you know, that idea of if you spot it, you got it, I actually agree that if you spot it, you got it. But there are two places, my take is, there are two places you can see it from. First of all, you can only see it because the brain cells are there. Somehow, some way, you've been there and through it. And if you've worked through it, then you spot it and you are a space of love for any healing that's needed by anyone around it. If you spot it and you haven't worked through it, then you have difficulty being a space of love, and that's where your work is, where the disturbance is.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
so, yeah, this
is
not
a good distinction. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, this isn't necessarily, you know, the other thing, I believe another subject that ties right in with it is one thing. Not that I'm ever saying that people hear something different than what I'm saying in my events or anything. That never happens, of course. But or maybe it does. But people will often turn this into forgiveness removes accountability, that now we forgive and we forget and we walk down the road and we let this abuse continue from the other person, whatever it may be. And, you know, one of the things that's very important to me is, of course, it's nothing like anything I've ever said whatsoever. But one thing that's very important to me is to remind them, and this is something I got, you know, actually at Heartland 20 years ago, was the differentiation between holding someone else down, you know, sort of like holding, criticizing, abusing them in whatever way it may be, verbal or physical, because of something that you have inside of yourself. You're making them pay for something that's yours, as opposed to a clear, conscious accountability. And I tell people, this does not remove accountability. If somebody, you know, let's say, you know, in murder or some sort of cancel the thought, some sort of thing like that happens, it doesn't remove the accountability, but I'm able to do it from a place of awareness, a place where I can own and be responsible for what's inside of me, to be conscious and clear that I'm not projecting what's inside of my heart into whatever it is I'm interpreting that seems to be happening outside of myself. Unfortunately, you know, one of the things in the American, the judicial system and, of course, the penal system and the correctional system, that's basically what it's built on. It's built on you're going to pay. And it's one of those interesting things you'll hear from time to time. Somebody's got to pay for this. Somebody. And I actually have a friend who was a prosecutor for many years in South Carolina and had to walk away because he felt that it was just one of those things that he had so many things coming through, and even with doing deep work, he just was like, because basically one of the tones that they would often have was, look, this family needs some sort of closure. Somebody's got to pay for this. And he's like, he just couldn't do that for very long. He ended up becoming a private attorney. Interesting thought. Somebody's got to pay. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, if that person is actually guilty, just somebody's got to pay. And that's no different than what Yeshua was saying, not in which you judge another. You are guilty of practicing, and somebody's got to pay for it, and it sure as heck ain't going to be me, because I didn't cause what I'm feeling, that high and mighty thing.
For sure. Interesting process, isn't it?
Yeah. But it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's, you know, it's just to know that I actually have, I can do something about it. I'm not at some sort of, I'm not a victim of some outside world. If there's anything I'm a victim of, it's of being a victim and somehow believing that there's something outside that controls what's within. And, yeah, as I always say on pretty much every call, I'm just thrilled to be on the team to be aware of this because, like I have said also many times, I really don't think I would have ever understood the Yeshua teachings without the absolute core base of forgiveness. If you don't have it, you have nothing. You literally have nothing. And if you don't have some sort of, at least some degree of direct experience of that which you're translating, again, you can't translate it. It just won't happen. Like you were saying about the igloo, or if I, you know, talk about some elusive whatever, like BBB grade actor in that did a couple of movies that nobody's ever heard of, and I was like, think about this person. People are going to be like, who is this person? But yet if I say Ray Charles, bang, that's going to pop for people. If it's not there to resonate, then it, obviously it can't resonate. And, wow, I mean, that's just the huge thing to realize that if I'm feeling it, it's mine. I mean, come on. Yeah, you don't hear that, what you often say about flip through all the channels and write down or put a strike on one side of the page every time you hear someone speaking from that place of empowerment of this is what I'm feeling and I'm clear that you simply triggered something that was already inside of me versus the other side of the page, which is you did this, I feel this because of you. There's not many checks on the responsibility side of the page, is there? If any at all, I would say.
Pretty rare. Pretty rare. I don't know if you were on the show yesterday or not, but we talked a little bit, you know, speaking of the penal system, we talked about the work that Rex and Michelle have been doing. Michelle's here at the Codependence Communication Practicum Intensive, but Rex is worked in the prisons yesterday, and he was sharing with us, or we had been sharing, we had done the scoring of the personal code evaluation. And here's a group of people, and some of them, you know, after decades in prison, still proclaiming their innocence, and watching their hostility scores in particular. You know, the personal code evaluation, if you remember it, lays out 10 different areas and where the holes are in the mind. And the biggest gain that this group made in overall scores in an evaluation that, you know, according to psychology, can't change. You know, once you're there, you're fixed there. And the scale is 1 to 100. And there were people making changes on the hostility scores of 40, 50, 60, 70 points, which is just monumental and impossible in the way the world looks at it, but becomes very normal if you've got those ancient Aramaic tools. It's just amazing to watch how the game shifts.
And I really am fascinated. I'm fascinated that with so many of I literally, someone else can call me whatever they want. I won't call myself an expert whatsoever. It's just interesting that to me, expert means lockdown in the fence. I'm floored. I'm flabbergasted. It's an amazing thing to see how many people that I see who are so widely regarded as some sort of linguistic expert with Aramaic or whatever it may be, or even the Jesus teachings or Bible languages, whatever, that really, really bless their hearts. It's almost like they don't have any idea what they're even looking at. All they're doing is just regurgitating the conditioning of what they learned, whether it's from a theological seminary, whatever. And, you know, that brings to mind this. The family that I spent, I did a personal retreat with a family a couple of weeks ago. I've been doing one-on-one retreats with people where they, you know, travel into Asheville, either a personal one-on-one couples or families. But I did one with a family recently, and it was amazing because the teenage daughter is going to, she's going to a biblical-based school, an evangelical school out west, and she's on scholarships. And I found it so intriguing because she told me about how they're constantly bringing her in the office quite a few times per month to make sure, number one, that the Unity Church that she goes to is not polluting her mind too much and not steering her off the course of her Christian faith. And then the other thing is they call her in and they make sure that she's being conditioned and programmed in the way that they want. And the other problem they had, they were really concerned that she had been hanging out with a yoga teacher. And they were really concerned that the thoughts and opinions of this yoga teacher are not those of this college and not those of Christianity. And it's amazing because she was told me this, and I got a smile from ear to ear, and I was like, which version of Christianity is it that you're speaking of right now? You know, it's the specific version that's at that specific school. But I was just like, wow, you know, that's an interesting thought that the indoctrination continues, and they're even checking up and making sure that it's going in. They're not making sure that that we're pulling things out, all of those shadows and all of these different issues that resonate in our being, all of those energy blocks. No. They're not taking bushel baskets off the light. They're actually putting and slamming and piling up bushel baskets on top of the light, and they're making sure that those bushel baskets, when they're indoctrinated and conditioned into those systems, they're making sure that they stay put and that they're not threatened by some sort of outside source. What an amazing thing that Christianity has become, the 100% perfect opposite of that which it, of its original meanings in Aramaic. I'm just like, wow. And I told her, she told me how the first year she was there, she was so amazed, it was awesome. She was loving all the Jesus stuff, the Bible stuff. And then when she got into her second semester, which she just finished, all of a sudden she realized the professor was not calling on her as much. She'd have her hand up in the back of the room, and she was just asking too many disturbing questions for him, and he was writing little comments on her work and things like that, little personal comments about chill out, et cetera. And she's so awake within that frame, and I told her, I hope you can see and realize the precious value of you being in this institution and being conscious and awake enough to see through its fences, to see through its ideology and its ultra-heavy conditioning, because you're going to come out after 4 years there, and since you walked through fairly awake, you're going to be able to come out the other side and identify and tell others about that from a place that has not only a personal experience in it, but that takes personal responsibility for what's in your own heart. And wow, what a huge thing. That's one thing that I've got a few people, like I've got friends that are within the Catholic Church that occasionally tell me, oh, I got to leave the church. And I'm like, well, you know, I personally don't, I'm not a member of any church, period. But I will say this. I say, look, we do what you need to do, follow your heart, but realize that we're also going to need people on the inside too. You know, don't leave it because of some sort of outside pressure that somehow makes you think that whatever you're doing is right, wrong, whatever it may be. Do what you need to do, but just do the forgiveness work wherever you are. Like Teddy Roosevelt said, do what you can with what you have where you are. And, I mean, that's the thing. It's not just going to be people outside of evangelical fundamentalist Christianity. It's people everywhere are waking up, and it's about all of us coming together rather than a lot of the finger-pointing, which is so easy. To be able to realize that, hey, we're really into this. We're all on the same support team, and we're all in this together.
Yay. For sure. The truth is, of course, if we listen to Einstein, he informs us that there's only one of us. Now, I love it when Einstein says, if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. And our mind tells us things that aren't true. And you know, when Yeshua talked about people whose father was not the same father as his, he was saying those. He was saying that if your body's mind, if your carbon-based memory is your father, then your father and my father don't agree. We're living in a different world, different reality structure, and you have to build new brain cells. You've got to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear in order to see at depth what's really being spoken about. So it's a pretty awesome process to engage in. Let's check in with Jeannie and see if there's anything happening in the chat room to be aware of, and or if there's anybody in the phone queue with a hand up.
Well, no, not really. Nobody has their hand up, so if someone presses one, you're first in line without waiting. Dr. Tim had to drop off, so I'm assuming his office is getting too loud. Oops, we did have a hand just go up. Area code 541, you're on the air.
Chuck Hansen, he's master of dirty tricks.
Oh, hello? Hello?
Well, hey, that was an interesting introduction. Hey there, young lady. How are you?
Oh, man. I took it off of my speaker in my car, which was very loud. Sorry. Anyway, I'm fine. Thank you. This is Julie from Ashland. I am driving, and I only have a minute, but I wanted to say thank you for what Dale just addressed, because I have found myself in many kinds of groups lately, and I find that the best thing I can do is hold the space of love, you know, through that filter. Just hold that as I'm listening and witnessing all the things that are being talked about. And there are times when I get kind of sucked in and want to participate actively, and then I realize it's a heavier energy, it's a density that I don't want to cover my light anymore. So I have to step back and just, I guess, witness. And I see myself as a conduit of light, or maybe a filter of some sort, and I guess that's all I need to do. It's starting to seem that way to me anyway. And I'll sign off now. I have to go, but thank you.
Thank
okay.
you, Julie.
Blessing. You know, when Yeshua says, you are the light of the world, he used the same words except for the pronoun when he said, I am the light of the world. And peeling off the bushel baskets is what forgiveness is about.
Yeah, I had a friend that actually sent me a text the other day, and he was really big in what he calls the charismania movement. And he sent me a little text, and he said, I'm doing a poll real quick. He said, what do you feel are the four biggest lies purported by Christianity? And the first thing I said was the first thing he said. He said is the humanization of God. And what I said was, you know, that God, whatever we call God, is somehow outside of us. And it was amazing because it really, I spent some time. I immediately answered him. It was instantaneous because I knew exactly. I gave him the first four, and then I gave him two honorable mentions. But one of those things was I spent some time after that for, like, I stopped everything I was doing for about an hour, and I sat there, and I paid attention to my breath. And, I mean, this is what I do when I translate. I sort of go into, like, a deep, you can almost say meditative place, and I go into an energetic place, and I'm not necessarily looking to add information. What I'm seeking to do is to just get myself out of the way so that deeper truth can come through and reveal itself to me. And I spent some time, and I really was thinking about, wow, look at that. That's religion. Not all religions, if they're approached consciously. I don't mean that in any way. But definitely a lot of the extremities of any religion, it becomes a conditioning system. And you're fine and dandy if you're in the fence, if you're in this particular belief system, this particular ideology. But as soon as you go outside of the fence, as soon as you go outside, we're going to judge you. And, of course, if the light that's within me, which is the light which this is within Yeshua, which is the light which is within you, which is the light of the one and the only being, where outside is there? The outside doesn't exist. There's only the one being. There's the one light. One thing I do in a lot of my talks is I take a piece of black construction paper, and I'll push a pen through it and hold a flashlight behind it, and I'll say, look, this is the Buddha, and I'll push another pen hole through it, and this is Krishna, and then I'll hit a bunch of other ones. This one's Jesus. You got to make the Jesus one really big. And then I'll pop a hole for some modern ones like Paramahansa Yogananda and Nisargadatta Maharaj and Sri 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 Yabadabadu and Eckhart Tolle. But the thing that I tell people is, look, there's one thing I'm seeking for you to get here, and it's this. How many lights are there? And sometimes people say, oh, there's five or six lights. And I'm like, no. How many lights are there? And they go, oh, and their jaws drop, and they go, there's only one light. And I say, ah, understand, there is literally only one light, and anything unlike the light of that truth is going to have to burn up when it comes into that presence. And that's exactly what the whole law of resonance is. When those things start shaking loose and they start rising up into that light, either you've got the tools to be able to remove that and let it burn up in the system, literally, or what you're going to do by bringing it up into the light and trying to stuff it down is to add even more kinetic energy into it so that you stuff the spring down even more intensely so that next time when it pops up again, it's going to be that much more intense. And it's one of those things that – it's just one of those roots that it's the basis of everything is understanding. When people ask me all the time on the road, they're like, "What's the, if you can tell us one most important thing," and it's about forgiveness. And wrapped right in with that is that there's nothing outside. There's nothing outside of truth. There's nothing outside of actuality. There's no light that's somehow outside of us, which is the one light. And when we can get that and when we can realize that, we'll understand so clearly that there's nothing you can add in that will add into that, that'll add more into that light, that'll somehow make it more valuable. In truth, the more we try to stuff in, to try to add to that light, what we actually do is we conceal the very thing we're trying to accentuate. And that's exactly how the process works.
Excuse me, my mute button was off there for a second. And we could punch some holes in the English language and say, and who are the light of the world? You are the light of the world. But most people have been pounded into the ground by the fear-based teachings. To me, that's one of the biggest holes in so much of the teaching of a man who said, fear not. There are so many who are out there talking about how fear is the beginning of the whole game. And, you know, you can't get much farther off base than that one.
Yeah, and I mean, and I've often talked about how that word fear, tedkol in Aramaic and Hebrew, what that actually means is essentially to be firing on all cylinders. The cool sound at the end of tedkul means whole body or whole being. It means embracing the one, embracing wholeness. And it's not the fear that comes in later when your stuff starts resonating and rises to the surface. What tedkul is not fear in any way whatsoever. What it is allowing that light to be so wholly wide open and increased that anything unlike it is gonna rise to the surface, much like if you're sort of bobbing for apples and you push your arms down into the water, if that water's high enough, eventually that stuff's going to start dropping out of the top and falling over the side. And forgiveness is the process of allowing that to happen. It's allowing that catalyst to increase to allow that light to continue to expand so that stuff can be thrown off, rather than trying to somehow hold it back and keeping it from happening and trying to push apples down in a big tub full of water. And, of course, if anyone's ever tried to push apples down in water, it's not a process that's very easy, but yet that's exactly how we go along living our lives. For so many people that live and their physical human body drops and they never realized even once that almost the entire time they're trying to push apples down in the tub or somehow trying to push corks down on the lake, when the very thing that we needed to really be doing was to throw them out. How many times you do it now, whatever needs to be done now, what about the next minute? You'll know then, and then you do it then, and then again, and then again, and then again, and then again. And the more of those corks you keep throwing out, there's less that you have to keep pushing down. There's less energy that's focused in on keeping it stuffed down. And ultimately, you realize, oh, my God, after months, weeks, or even years or more of work, you realize things aren't so intense anymore, and you're in the same situations or similar situations and you're not feeling that intensity, that's keeping you from being able to be conscious in the present moment. And, man, what a gift that is. And that's, you know, when I hear people saying, oh, my God, but when I started doing all the forgiveness work, all hell broke loose. And I say, hallelujah, that's exactly the point that's supposed to happen here. It's supposed to break loose and it's supposed to come out because that's the whole point of the process. And then you start to realize when you've got less piled up on top of your light, you start to realize that that stuff that conceals the light is not who you are. You are that light itself. You are the light of the world. What a huge, huge realization for us to come into.
The work. That's what it's all about. And that's what we're here to support. And Dale, tell us a little bit about what events you've got coming up. What are you up to?
Well, I just actually literally just announced what I'm calling the Primal Voice. It's what I call a transformational toning event. I've been really doing some amazing things with toning with worksheets with a small pod of people that I work with in Asheville. And it's an amazing thing that along with breathing, it's just an experiment. I'm not sure exactly where this is going entirely, but after studying all these different indigenous cultures in prepping my first book and how they use sounds and toning in different kinds of healing practices and realizing that almost every indigenous culture on planet Earth, going back to the beginning of recorded history, used not only music but just simple tone sounds in different like healing practices, it really intrigued me. And you know what it took me back to? It took me back to a moment, and I don't remember if – I think you were there, Michael. It was in the Heart Center. It was the summer of 95, and it was with John Addis, actually. Somehow we got – it was during Laws of Living, and somehow we got into singing I Love Myself the Way I Am, There's Nothing I Need to Change, you know. And we got into that and singing it, and all of us that were there at that point of the intensive were huddled up like a football team, like a spiritual heart-based football team, and we just kept singing it over and over and over, allowing that stuff to come up, allowing ourselves to feel so many ancient wounds that had been in there that we didn't even realize were there. And it took me into such a deep place that it was right around that time that I really started getting into things like sound healing. But understanding, though, from the realization that I really feel it's like you've got to understand you got to have that real, true base of forgiveness before you can really understand what healing even means. And I feel like I'm at that point now where with the toning, like as an example, I started this all myself. I was my own guinea pig doing worksheets. And actually one of the things, in addition to breath work at different stages of the worksheet, I've actually been going in and doing different kinds of there's different sounds that I've been doing. And I realized that they've actually somehow been shaking loose, helping me access some of the different emotions and thoughts that I wasn't necessarily, it was sort of like almost, I don't want to say shaking things to the surface, but I'm not sure exactly where it's going yet, but this toning weekend, I literally just announced it this week. It's going to be the last week of September at Mountain Light Sanctuary here near Asheville, and it's going to be the last one I do this year in Asheville. It's probably the last one I do, period, weekend retreat, but it's going to be an amazing journey, and we're going to do still point breath work, which I do at every single one of my retreats, and we do I don't really call it baptism, the water blessing, immersion in the creek. We do an anointing process. There's nature walks. It's just an amazing space, and I literally just announced that about 2 days ago, I think. So anyone that's interested in that, you can go on my website. It's really easy to find, DaleAllenHoffman.com. And I'm excited. I'm really excited about where this is going. I'm not sure yet, so I'm just open.
What is the date?
It's the 26th through the 28th of September. It's September 26th, 27th, 28th.
Cool. Well, we'll put it in the hopper. Go to the website if you want to find out and participate in Dale's upcoming weekend in September. In the meantime, we're down to just the last few seconds. So if you are ready to take your work to the next level, check out what Dale's doing. Also, check out our website. We're in the middle of our intensive season. We've got 3 more intensives to go. Why is this happening to me again? Teacher training and Laws of Living. So we appreciate you. Bring us things to the show tomorrow and create the best years yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Bless you. Bye-bye.